You're listening to episode 15 of David's Out for a Good Time, a Spotify original podcast with me, David Olshanetsky of theshinyspears.com.
And me, Milady Dubé, the super fun, sexy co-host.
As we'll discuss everything young people should be talking about or already talking about. But, you know, it's the New Year's. Let's focus on everything that we need to address first. What did you do for New Year's? And addressing last episode, did you finally find that fit man to get with at midnight?
No. Of course not. Literally, even I knew no. New Year's, I was working until 2 a.m. But I stayed there until about 4, and it was really fun. The people that I work with are like really good people, so I didn't mind having to spend it there. So it was calm, you know, it was okay. Still no fit. You know what? There was a fit guy, but because I wasn't sauced enough, I got too scared to even, like, try.
That's not the move for 2019. In 2019, you know that Vine, which is, like, the Miss Keisha one, like, I'm a bad bitch, you can't kill me?
Uh-huh.
There's another one from that same Vine person that no one ever quotes, and it's such a good one. It's that same little girl on the same day with the doll and everything in the kitchen, and she goes, I'm a bad bitch, I'm a bad bitch. And she's just in the kitchen singing on her own. That's the mood for 2019, okay? That is the mood.
So what did you do then?
I went to Primrose Hill to see the fireworks all over London, and then I went clubbing, but literally for 35 minutes, because you ever have those friends that when they get drunk, they just vanish?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that happens. Normally, it's fine when you're in a big group. Not so fine when it's just you two. We've got an incredible episode coming up, including an interview with Ollie Alexander of Years and Years, a listener asking for advice. But first, let's see what's popping on social media.
David's Out for a Good Time, a Spotify original podcast.
Our first story is about Modern Family star 20-year-old Ariel Winter. She plays Alex on the show. In a cute New Year's Eve post, the Modern Family star shared of herself and her 31-year-old boyfriend Levi kissing. She had a drink in her hand of champagne. It looked glam. It looked classy. Very much New Year's 2019 mood. Do you agree?
Yes, it did. It did.
The photo had almost 50,000 comments, most of which were calling her out for drinking underage. She later said it wasn't hers, but her boyfriend's, and she was holding it for the photo. Do you believe her?
To be honest, I don't give a fuck. Maybe it's just because we live in England, the drinking age is lower, and it's like, who cares?
The funniest thing is, when I was scripting this topic, and I was like, Nalady, did you see this photo? You fully didn't even think there was going to be a story about it.
I literally was like, didn't think anything of it. If this was a regular person, everyone would be like, keep it moving. But just because she's just such a big person, everyone's going to be like, oh my God, you're sharing the wrong message to people. Like, how come you're drinking underage? Like, so many people could take influence from this.
It's all about social media and whether people are leading double lives or they're hiding stuff from their followers.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, she's not a normal person. Mm-mm. So that's why, even if she doesn't want, like Rihanna always says, I'm not a role model. At the end of the day, Rihanna is a role model for a lot of people, even if she says a million times, I'm not a role model.
Yeah.
If you have that big of a following, people are going to analyze what you do and it may influence their own decisions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have other stars like Anwar Hadid, who's Gigi and Bella's brother, which is so weird to say that he's a star and he's like modeling for all these, when he's just known for being a brother two models who are like, they're just like, why?
I know.
But moving on, that's not the topic. Moving on. You know, I literally saw a TMZ video of him looking messy, and you know, I don't want to do a Wendy Williams and say like what he was on or what he was drinking, but let's just say the comments on the YouTube video, you can look them up yourself. But stumbling out of a club, throwing himself head forward into the back of an Uber Lux, and like, he's 19 years old. This club is like the Nice Guy in LA, which is like a really fancy posh club, but it's 21 plus.
Yeah.
It's like, literally, there's so many videos of all these people and their posts on social media of them underage in the club, all these things. And it's really annoying because then you have other people like Olivia Jade, who's a YouTuber. She's the daughter of Lori Loughlin from Full House.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like very clean cut on social media. She's sort of the opposite of Anwar Hadid.
Mm-hmm.
You would never see photos of her on TMZ stumbling out of a club with sus comments.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, like, recently there's been vlogs and videos. She's in her first year of university at UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
And in the background of photos, she has red cups, beer bottles. Very clearly, she's living her best uni life.
Yeah.
We did the same thing in our first year. Granted, for us in the UK, it's legal. But, like, it's expected that she would be doing this in her first year of uni in America. And so it's sort of like she's not willing to put this on her social media. She never put photos up or videos up of her with like these red cups or beer bottles. It's all like hot yoga sessions and like pressed juices and just like, you know, living her best healthy life.
Mm-hmm.
So some people might say, well, Anwar's being messy in public and then messy on social media and he's underage and everything, but he's not bullshitting.
Yeah.
And you have people like Olivia Jade who are showing their best self on social media, but then in their personal life, they're getting messy. They just don't want you to know.
But sometimes I think it's all about like aesthetic and the person that you want to show. Because I just think, yeah, fair enough that she like Olivia shows us all these like press juice healthiness things, and then she just doesn't want to show everything else.
I know I'm the one that brought up Olivia Jade, but like to play devil's advocate on myself, playing myself in 2019 already. You can say, well, her, that Instagram is just one side of her. And, you know, she probably does drink those pressed juices and do hot yoga, but that's just one side of her life. And then this college partying side is another side of her life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm someone who doesn't have that sort of filter. My social media is everything, be it that hot yoga or that college party. Same with you, right? You just, it all goes in one feed.
Yeah.
You don't have a separate life for another account.
Apart from Finsta.
Yeah, but that's, that, we get deep there. So, like, with Olivia Jade, you can arguably say, well, this is just one part of her personality.
Yeah.
But it's sad to think that she doesn't feel comfortable being, like, a normal teenager.
Yeah, I know.
Incomplete. So do you think people like Olivia Jade, Anwar Hadid, Ariel Winter, okay, fair enough if they're going to drink off screen and without all the cameras, should they be publicizing it so that they're underage in America followers? Because most of these are three American celebrities. Their underage followers in America aren't like, well, if Ariel Winter and Olivia Jade are like getting fucked up at parties, I should get fucked up too.
No, because again, to go with the laws, like, isn't it? It is illegal. Like, if you're all gonna do stuff like that, don't post it everywhere. Because if you have such a big following, it will influence people. But at the same time, do you have to admit to the world that it is alcohol in a glass, or could you just be like, nah, this is water? This is just carbonated water.
We don't know what's in her drink or what she's drinking. We're not there.
Mm-hmm.
If I had 50,000 comments on my photo saying, you're drinking underage, you're drinking underage, I would 100% feel like I have to address this. Wouldn't you?
Out of my own stubbornness, I'm kind of someone that's like, why should I have to explain myself to you?
Do you feel that you edit yourself online?
I'd never give off the persona that I'm like richer than I am or anything like that. The most I like edit of myself is like a filter. I would never give off the impression.
Are there parts of your personality that you hide though online, or like things that you wouldn't want to share?
A little bit.
It's so weird to think someone like Ariel Winter, who's 20 years old, by the way, like she's literally just a few months away from being legal.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, you're drinking on New Year's Eve. New Year's Eve, by the way, like I'm pretty sure some families give their kid like a sip of champagne to make them feel grown up.
I know.
But anyways, they're like making it such a big deal. If she was in LA, I believe, but let's say she was in LA.
Yeah.
3-hour drive, boom, she's in Mexico where you have to be 18 to drink. Like, if she took the photo in Cancun or whatever, it would have not been a deal at all. She would say, I'm where it's legal. It's so crazy how just a few miles of, okay, not a few miles, but a few hours of travel, and it completely changes the context of the photo.
Most of the beef is like people just getting mad that celebrities do get away with a lot of things way more than regular people.
Exactly. But the thing is, I think it's, yo, I didn't even think about that. That's really smart. I do think it is a lot of people feel like, well, I wouldn't get away with this. But Becky, yes, you do. It, like you said at the beginning, if a girl who has 100 followers in the middle of nowhere in a place where you have to be 21 to drink posted a photo, I guarantee there would not be 50,000 comments on your photo saying, why are you drinking underage,
sis?
Yeah,
definitely.
It would not be a scandal. Definitely. And that's why it's unfortunate. And that's probably why some of them feel like Olivia Jade, that they have to live a double life, because they feel like they're going to get backlash.
Do you think you edit yourself?
There are parts of me that I hide, but not in the same way as Olivia Jade, where it feels like two different people. I'm sort of in that same mindset of Rihanna, where like, well, I'm not a role model, but simultaneously, I do know that things I do have actions and power behind them. Recently, I saw, every now and then I like to click on random accounts that have engaged with my like posts or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And like one of them in her bio literally had 13. And I knew I had young followers, but that was the first time it clicked in my head, like, oh shit, a 13-year-old is following me.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I thought, oh shit, like I can't be making jokes like this if I have young people looking at myself. That mindset lasted an hour. I'm not going to change who I am because of who follows me.
Mm-hmm.
But simultaneously, it does make me...
You kind of feel responsible.
I do feel responsible. And that's why I'm happy I have something like David's Out for a Good Time, where we can talk about serious, heavy topics in a fun, lighthearted way at the same time.
Mm.
I can talk about sex jokes and drinking and culture and everything on my Tumblr, but then still be like, by the way, make sure you register to vote, make sure you know how to pay taxes, make sure you are a strong, independent person in 2019. Bad bitches only!
A Spotify original podcast. Ha ha ha!
With RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars 4 coming out, we've seen lots of discussions surrounding trans contestant Gia Gunn. Gia, who previously stated she wouldn't go on an All Stars season because of RuPaul's past transphobia, has had her short stint on the show surrounded by rumors and drama. Even before the cast was announced, there was rumors she was on the show and had quit the show because of transphobia. This never happened. However, like I said, the entire time she was on the show, it felt like her trans identity was the storyline they were pushing, and the other storyline they were pushing was her being a bitch.
My question about this is, and I asked this out of curiosity.
Okay.
With Drag Race, I thought it was only men, born men, that were allowed to participate. Like, being a transitioned woman doing drag when it's a team of men.
So there is a lot of different types of drag. And mm-hmm. something that we've seen with, you know, recently there's been the announcement of Drag Race UK. Mm-hmm. There's already a second season of Drag Race Thailand coming out. Mm-hmm. There's a show in Chile that Gia was actually a part of called The Switch, which is a different title, but was licensed as a Chilean version of Drag Race.
Mm-hmm.
All the other versions have made it very clear in their terms and conditions for applications mm-hmm. that all types of drag are welcome, mm-hmm. including... There's different terms. There's AFAB drag. There is open applications for bio queens. So if you're a bio queen, you are someone who is, like, air quotes, a biological woman mm-hmm. who, you know, it's more about the aesthetic and you can still paint yourself in an exaggerated way. It's a presentation in a show. And mm-hmm. that's why a lot of people want to see a bio queen mm-hmm. or other types of drag on the show, because drag for a long time, you know, origins of the term drag, mm-hmm. people haven't really pinpointed, but the story people like to share the most is that it used to be in scripts, because originally women wouldn't be in plays or, you know, theatrical shows.
Yes.
It would be all men, and yeah. men would have to dress as a girl. Dressed mm-hmm. as a girl, mm-hmm. drag.
Okay. So Ru not wanting her on, is it maybe him trying to have one type of drag then?
So what people are saying is that Gia coming on the show mm-hmm. was their way of saying, sorry for all the past transphobia, mm. but look, see, we're not transphobic. Here is a woman
one,
on the show.
But only one.
Well, so there's been a few contestants mm-hmm. that have been on the show, and then after they left the show, including Gia, mm-hmm. they transitioned. There's been a few that actually were in the process of transitioning and paused their transition to go on the show.
Mm-hmm.
There is some argument about a season 9 contestant, so about 2 years back now,
yeah.
called Peppermint. And Peppermint had already done most of her transition before she was on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But she sort of came out through being on the show
uh-huh.
versus Gia was out before she was on the show. So there is a lot of controversy around her appearance on the show. And Gia has said since, spoiler alert, being booted off the show, that she had actually confronted RuPaul about his past transphobia and that the entire sequence was left out of the show. There's been other people that have sort of backed this up without necessarily, you know, getting involved. Monet Exchange said that there was a lot more scenes of RuPaul going around the workroom, talking to them all individually, and she also found it weird that even scenes that had nothing to do with that weren't included of these one-to-one conversations. Considering this is RuPaul's show, is this fair enough for him to say, I don't want this scene of me and Gia having to talk about my past being on the show?
Yes. If it's your show, do what you want. However, with all the stuff that I've like heard about him and like the stuff that has been coming out like on social media about Drag Race, of like him leaving shit out and making people look in a weird way, I would feel like, if anything, wouldn't you want your show to be a little bit more honest?
And that's the thing, you know, the show always has guest judges. On the episode that Gia, spoiler alert again, went home on, there was the guest judge, Olympian Gus Kenworthy. And they did, normally when the judges talk, it's like a sort of shoulders up shot.
Mm-hmm.
But they zoomed out real fast when Gus said the following line. Gus said, you know, and I'm not saying this verbatim, but he said, you know, this is really important for the community. It's really mm-hmm. important for trans people to see you on this show. And I don't think anyone really realizes how big of a thing this is.
Mm-hmm.
And RuPaul was just stone-faced. Like, just like, eyes forward, no, like, no reaction, nothing. Versus all the other judges were sort of like, oh yeah, that's a true comment. It was sort of weird that they wanted to include RuPaul in that shot. And I think it was a sort of edit of like, look, he agrees. But RuPaul was stone-faced.
Maybe the whole thing of having Gia on the show was not his idea. Maybe it was the people behind him. Definitely.
Well, in a YouTube video after she left the show, Gia said, "I chose the offer to go on All Stars to create good television. And that's what it is at the end of the day. And I'm not asking for anybody to forgive me for the things I did on the show, but I am asking for people to understand that Drag Race, at the end of the day, is a competition about drag, but it is also very much an entertainment show." And this was sort of addressing the fact that she was edited to be the villain of the season. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you can't blame the edit. Obviously, it's unfortunate that they highlighted more of her negative moments on the show. But you have to do those things in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But saying that, there was a lot of social media comments about a scene where she looked particularly villainous was actually cut and pasted from another part in the episode. So it's sort of like they were going out of their way to, you know, as she says, create entertainment.
Yeah.
But it's just unfortunate they picked her when, like Gus said, it's so important for her to be on the show in this current time.
Do you think when people agree to go on Drag Race that there's like a thing of we're allowed to do X, Y, and Z?
Well, that's with all reality TV shows. You sign away most of your rights.
That's so unfair.
Gia went on Willem's podcast and she said that she has nothing to lose at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Most people only go on Drag Race twice, a normal season and All Stars. And after that, what they do with their life is their choice. And they're devoted fans.
Mm-hmm.
So she can go out and say all these things and talk about editing, but she's the one in control now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unfortunate that all this has to happen after things are out of her control.
Yeah. I think she might have to work really hard to change people's opinions, but she seems like the sort of person that's like, I don't give a fuck. I'm just going to do what I'm going to do.
A Spotify original podcast.
So for episode 15's advice question from the inbox, I want to pick something from a younger listener because it's crazy. Like I said in the earlier episode, we have people as young as 13 that are engaging with our content.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want something not as heavy because we've had some questions that are heavy, sis.
Yeah.
And they're always normally about relationships because apparently you're the queen of relationships. That speaks volumes. So we're going to take things a step back and focus on a question that's about friendships. Anonymous said, how do you deal with people you're really close with unfollowing you on social media and cutting you out of their life?
When people do stuff like that, it means usually 99.9% of the time means you're the problem.
What?
I swear to God, people only cut you off and delete you if there's been major beef. Because why else would you do it? You wouldn't do it if it was just a tiff. I think it's like a bad thing when friends, like a genuine friendship falls apart.
Anonymous, you don't listen to her.
And you block each other and you don't.
No, they didn't say block each other.
What? Oh, box them.
Yeah.
Mate, means, I'm sorry, but sometimes you gotta admit, you might be the problem.
Maybe it was just my reading and my intonation of the question, but it seemed like it was a surprise. Like, I was really close to this person and they just blocked me out of the blue. That's how I took the question.
I'm thinking as they've done something. So we can go from different angles.
Okay, you can do done something.
Okay.
That's not how I saw it.
Some people, okay, from the way I like took the question is like, you've done something, Anonymous. But
simultaneously, I'm going to take it from your reading for a second.
Uh-huh.
Don't like blame yourself for everything. That's not a healthy way to go through life. If someone's blocked you and you're like, oh, well, I did something wrong. And let's say you apologize and you dealt with it and you genuinely were in the wrong and you did everything you could and they still have you blocked.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. Your life is too short to focus on what one person thinks.
But it also depends
not to be fake deep, but none of this is real.
But the thing is, it also depends what that person's done, because I've had a friend who's had a massive falling out. And to be honest, it was her fault. Even though that girl that she fell out with as well was also in the wrong, my friend was more in the wrong. And it's to the point where the other girl.
But that's easy for you to see because you weren't in this. It was two other people.
But I know them both and I know how toxic they are. And
I'm saying if you were in it, if you were one of the two, you wouldn't have known that, would you?
Nah, but I just think with time, how to deal with it comes time. You know, that person might get over it and might like unblock you, but also like you need to look at yourself and look at the situation and just like dissect it. Don't grow obsessed with it because shit has already happened and you can't really change anything.
The way I read the question about the out of the blue, that's how I felt. Like you were really close and one day you just went and they're like weren't following anymore and like they weren't replying to messages or whatever. You don't know what other people have going on in their life.
Mm.
Maybe it was personal. Maybe they're like, I need to get rid of this person. But in general, you don't know what they're going through or what their mindset is. Or for all you know, they could be going through some like depressive spiral and they just cut everyone out and they think everyone's toxic and they need to be on their own.
Mm-hmm.
And then like 4 months down the line, like this has happened to me before. I've had people literally like 2 years even after our friendship dissolved, messaging me and be like, oh, sorry, I was like in a really bad place when everything ended.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had the same thing?
No.
You're like, I'm a bad bitch.
No, I've never experienced that, touch wood. I've never experienced
Literally had people just like vanish. And like I said, that's why I read the questions out of the blue, because when it's a fight, I don't see it as like a shock. Like, I expect it almost. Mm-hmm. That's why I read the questions out of the blue, because it felt like I don't know how to deal with it. Mm-hmm. So you don't know what headspace or like what someone's going through in their personal life. I think maybe you disagree, but like, it's worth sending a message, even if you don't think they're going to read it or respond. Mm-hmm. Being like, hey, is everything okay? What's up? I saw you unfollowed. Like, if it's that deep that you were close, and if they don't respond to that even, you tried. You're not a mind reader, and it's not your responsibility to worry about that person if they're not willing to engage.
A Spotify original podcast.
My name's Joe, and my coming out story is basically that I came out because my sister's boyfriend at the time was teasing me about whether I was gay or not. So I just told him that I was, because I thought it would be funny, and I thought it was the easiest way to come out. Confirmed it with my sister a few days later. Told my best friend after that, because she was annoyed at me because I wouldn't ask out a girl. And then we just ended up talking about boys. Told all of my close friends that I wanted to tell personally, then let them tell whoever they wanted. And I was like the most popular boy in school for like a day in year 10, and it was brilliant. My parents were both fine with it after a while. They both took about a year to come round, but they didn't mind in the end. The song I'm going to pick is Supercut by Lorde, just because I think it's such a masterpiece of an album, and I think that song in particular needs to get more attention and more appreciation just because of how hard hitting it is and just how much it means to me, to be honest.
Thank you so much for submitting your call and come out. If you would like to be part of a future call and come out, just message me on theshitneyspears.com and share your story, and we'll hit you up and see if you want to be a part of a future episode. We've also got an amazing thing, which is David's Bops and Bangers, our Spotify associated playlist. If you don't know about this yet and you haven't listened to another episode, David's Bops and Bangers is where we put all the songs that we've discussed in the episode, if they're contextual for a story, or from past episodes. So it's great to scroll through, see some fun songs from guests of ours, or songs that Nalady and I just love at the minute. So Nalady, let's hear what songs you consider bops or bangers.
First, I have Redbone by Childish Gambino, then Sober by Mahalia, but the Jerome Vandal remix. Then I've got 2 Weeks by Grizzly Bear. Then Romeo by Basement Jacks. And lastly, Promiscuous by Nelly Furtado and Timbaland, because that's an all-time banger. And it will never die. It will never die. If I hear this in the club, it goes off. Always.
12-year-old you just grinding in front of the mirror to it.
Promiscuous girl, whatever you are.
Nelly Furtado just joined us in the studio.
Go on then, give me your tunes.
So my tracks start with Modern Love by David Bowie, With or Without You by U2, Paris by Sabrina Carpenter, Gimme More by Britney Spears, and Kill the Lights by Alex Newell and DJ Cassidy. Alex Newell is non-binary, and this is our first non-binary person on the playlist, so Shout out for that. Mm-hmm. But the song that has a secret gay history behind it is Cherry by Rina Samewana. So Rina is a Japanese-born, London-raised, amazing singer. You know, Nalady always drags me for not really picking indie singers, but this is like just that borderline between indie and pop.
I am
so
rolling
I can
my eyes so much right now. Rolling.
Cherry is one of her best songs. It's also one of her most streamed. I sort of get Pharrell, like Blow by Beyonce vibes from it, and I don't really like Pharrell anymore, so that's a good compliment this rare occasion. With Cherry, Rina joins a cohort including Troye Sivan, Kalani, and many others whose songs diversify the romantic narratives that are often encoded in pop music today. She's singing about a girl that she saw on the tube one day, and it just changed her life. That was the moment she realized, maybe things are different, and maybe I finally understand why I don't feel like my female friends. Mm. And that's what the whole story of the song is. And it's something that people ignore listening to this song and why I picked it compared to other songs. Because when you hear a love song, people just automatically picture girl and guy. And with this, she sort of alludes to it, but it's in the same way that Bloom by Troye Sivan, which is also in our Bops and Bangers playlist from a previous week, alludes to it. They're not really overt, but it's nice to see this diversification of pop music and this, you know, Love Lies underline Normani and Khalid vibe, you know, where they're sort of saying, like, this is what the love story is about, okay? This is Nalady having a dance in the corner thinking about this bop of a song. You can check all these songs out and the songs from our past 15 episodes on Spotify's associated playlist, David's Bops and Bangers, and make sure to follow it. And make sure to follow this podcast if you aren't already. We've also got music by our guest, Ollie Alexander from the band Years and Years, who'll be interviewing in just a second. You're listening to David's Out for a Good Time, Spotify original podcast. Naledi and I are joined by Ollie Alexander of Years and Years.
Hello.
So good to have you here.
Hey.
So good to be here.
Yay. So happy 2019 to all of our listeners. Hope you're like settling into the new year. Mm-hmm. Hopefully everything's good. Hopefully you're not as like distressed and destroyed as we already are.
We need to give 2019, you know how 2018 was like 2018, but 20, now it's dead.
Yeah, 2018.
Oh, 2018. You already have one. Okay.
That's what I'm seeing. But we have to wait for like Queen Hayley Kiyoko to approve of
the aforementioned message. 2015? No, that doesn't work.
No.
Fine isn't a sexuality either. Or is it?
I identify as fine at all times. So before we go into new music or your plans for 2019, let's sort of focus on the end of 2018. And you put out a bop that is Play.
Yes.
I'm obsessed. We've discussed Jax Jones before. I think that everything Jax Jones puts out is just straight up fire.
Yeah, yeah. You've said that multiple times.
I'm obsessed. I think Jax Jones is our secret like queer ally because every song he puts out is like Demi Lovato, MNEK, like just the people he chooses to work with and the vibe of the music. I just feel like it's a smash.
Well, Jax is a really sweet guy and I realized I loved him when he told me how he was like, oh, I was getting my nails done the other day with my wife, Deandra, and they had some, like, lol story. I can't remember now, but I was like, you're a good guy. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If you were comfortable enough to get your nails done with your wife, like, you're good in my books.
So, Play was obviously incredible. How did that come about?
Well, we are both at the same label, mm-hmm. And we both work with a producer called Mark Ralph. So, we had always had plans to make something together. And, you know, we made a lot of dance music in the beginning more, I suppose, years and years. So it's like, you know, return to the dance.
Absolutely. And, you know, I saw you were also in the studio with Nick Jonas at some point. So besides him being a snack of a man, what was happening there? Was it something for his album, something for like future work with you guys or a collaboration? Like, what was it?
He is so hot, isn't he?
Mate. He's him, it's just like, it's just so sad to see him married now because I'm like, mate, you were my childhood. Like
Priyanka stays winning.
I know. But she's like, mate, you can still get it.
My Nick Jonas story is really basic. Apparently, he wanted to work with me, which I was very flattered by. And I was like, yeah, of course, I'll hang out with you for a day in a studio. Like, and didn't know what to expect. And he was like, actually talented and so nice. And he just had loads of ideas and just wanted to like write a love song about Priyanka, basically.
Oh, amazing.
He was like, yeah, you know, like we met under the stars. And like, I think that would be a cute lyric. And I was like, wow, this is like too much, but it's real, you know? Yeah. I was like, it's nice to know that, you know, he actually is real, you know?
Do you ever get surprised when people like him reach out to you?
Yeah, I'm always surprised. I don't know. There's so many artists just like, we're all fighting for attention maybe or something. So when someone gives it to you, you're like, oh, thanks.
My favorite Nick Jonas thing is, you know that song Jealous?
Yes.
So the Tinashe remix, her opening like line is Nick J, Tinashe, it's the remix. Oh. And I literally think it's the most basic, like they're just saying their names, but her voice is like butter. It's just so good.
Yeah, no, I'm here for that. Everyone says their names at the beginning of stuff and they're very successful at it.
Jason Derulo.
Yeah, you're not allowed to say that around him, by the way.
What? Why?
I was told once, like, don't say it.
Maybe he's just sick of it.
But he's still, it's still his like production tag, isn't it?
Is it?
Is it?
I thought it was.
It's still on his. Does he not do it anymore? I don't listen to his music anymore, so.
I don't think I heard it on Swalala.
Yeah, same.
Who's left that you've not seen?
Well, Beyonce for sure. But then I almost don't even want to meet her. I want to keep her like as an idol. You know.
Mm-hmm.
What would be your girl to girl chit chat with Beyonce?
I'd just be like, babe, are you tired? Are you okay?
Oh.
Like, no, not like, I just, like, I want to look, I'm just, like, interested in her mental health. Like, because she is the hardest working woman in the world, and she's been doing this for decades.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mean that she is tired. Like, we can't have that narrative out there. Like, I think she's still amazing and on top, but I would just be like, I also would want to know, like, what she does after a show, because I remember watching her and being like, does she just go and like eat some cereal like I do and then go to bed? Like, what does she do?
Is that your post-show ritual?
Sometimes.
Well, cereal.
Crunchy nut cornflakes.
Well, there's that photo where Beyonce paid like over $1,000 on Nando's. So it was obviously for like a whole crew and team. I don't know if she necessarily jumped in on that, but it's good to know she's taking care of the people around her. Like, what was your first concert?
I think it was Coldplay.
What was your first concert, Naledi?
It was a gig, and it was a band called Dog Is Dead, and they don't make music anymore, but it was...
R.I.P. Mine was Britney, and the most animated she got on stage and the most like engaged she was with like the people that she was working with was at the end when she had like a 30-second like part where she was like, and this is my drummer so-and-so by name, and then like he had a drum solo, and then this is so-and-so dancer, and like every single person on stage had at least 30 seconds where like by name she like gave them a like moment. I know Beyonce did the same thing. When I saw Beyonce though, everyone had their moment.
I think it's nice to, I don't know, I think audience appreciates that.
Exactly.
You're all on stage, so like you're all performers and you're giving something of value. Like I think it's nice to, for whoever to like acknowledge that.
Yeah. When I'm doing my 3 a.m. dancing in my room and it's a fake concert set, I always end with a, and give it up for my band.
Yeah. The band, ladies and gentlemen.
You're so witty and on the spot, and it's really good. And obviously, because
really?
Yeah. And I remember seeing an NME profile on you, and they did like a full, what would be the equivalent, like an A4 page in the magazine with just one of your photoshoot images. And they put a quote like over half of it. And it was, if I don't get fucking guest list for the Spice Girls tour, I'm quitting the music industry.
True.
And the thing is, you obviously said that in jest, yeah. But I'm one of those people that when I do some sort of press thing or I can see something after the fact, the first two things I'm like checking and like I'm always annoyed about is the title, and then whatever they pick is like the bolded quote.
Yeah.
Does that not annoy you that like someone who has no awareness of you, especially because NME is such a big thing that people in all different countries are reading, that's their first thing is seeing that quote?
Oh, babe. But the thing is, there's like nothing you can do. Like, honestly, I think the first time I read an interview with myself, I was like, what a twat. Like, I sound like such an idiot. What am I saying? You know, and it's like, it's awful. And obviously, yeah, they do all those things. They just take the quote out of context and like put it big. And, you know, it's clickbait, fake news. That's all it is. But then I actually thought that was a funny quote, so I didn't mind. You know, that's why Beyonce doesn't do any interviews.
Well, did you get the tickets yet for the summer?
No, but I'm hoping it will happen.
Because the Spice Girls say that they want to bring people on stage to like join them for a one-off song in place of Victoria.
Oh my God, like Taylor.
Yeah, right. But it'll be covering one of their songs. So each show will have a different person coming on stage in place. And they've obviously not locked any of this down, but there's like names being thrown around, like Dua Lipa coming on for a song, Adele coming on for a
song. Who's throwing around these names?
The press. What Spice Girls song would you want to join them?
Say You'll Be There?
That's a classic.
Like, would love to be on Wannabe.
Wannabe also.
Yeah.
Like, I would want to just Stop.
Spice Up Your Life, Stop. Ooh, with the dance routine.
Yeah. Let's move on to another passion of yours, acting.
Oh, acting.
Yes.
So I feel like whenever an actor goes into an interview, the first question that they ask someone like, you know, Gaga, or like as in a musician who also acts, Troye Sivan, Jennifer Lopez, Selena, come through.
I love that I'm in this list.
They always say like, well, what's next? Are you going to go back to acting? Like if you're on a break from music, what have you auditioned for that you actually haven't like got?
Oh my God, so many.
Are you allowed to?
Well, yeah, the movie's out.
Yeah. I'm trying to think now. Well, I haven't auditioned for anything for like years. But back in the day, I don't know, name a movie and I probably auditioned for it. Like Harry Potter, Narnia. What did I ever come close to? There was this movie called We're the Millers.
You auditioned
no
for that?
Yeah.
For the way. Will Poulter role,
yeah,
right?
I had a screen no test. So I got kind of far. Oh. Which is so weird, isn't it?
And no
then,
way.
Yeah, and then this other movie, that Dane DeHaan ended up doing.
Is it a horror?
Yes.
I kind of, or like kind of psychological.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, because when you're an actor, very similar to being in the music industry, you have people who you're always compared to. Yeah.
And who are you always compared to?
Well, as an actor, it was always this guy, Dane DeHaan.
Yeah.
This kid called Thomas Sangster.
Yeah.
You know, you fill in the sort of like weird, nerdy white boy roles, I guess. And I would see those other actors, like, I'd be like, they're stealing my career, and become like super successful, you know. And I would always just be like, oh.
You could have done that with Miss Jennifer Aniston and Rhythm.
I know. Things could have been so. Oh, do you know what? One thing, now you've got me talking about it, that really upset me was, you remember the movie Pride?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was between me and the guy who was in it.
Mm. For the lead?
No, he's like the young photographer.
Okay.
He's kind of a lead.
Yeah.
And I was getting emails from the producers. I was meeting them. They were like, we can't wait to work with you. And then like 2 weeks before, they confirmed or whatever, they cast someone else. And I was heartbroken. But, you know.
Would you want to go back into that?
It would have to be something really fun, I think. Like if I had magic powers or like I'm on a space station.
What about theatre?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's just like if it's something good.
Would you do a musical?
And I don't have any time, though. A musical?
Like a West End show.
To be honest, I feel like that would sort of be a bit of my nightmare.
Really?
If I'm honest.
Really?
Just personally, like I wouldn't want to. But maybe, you never know. Ask me again in a couple years.
Yeah. Well, I have some insider tea actually, and I waited for like ever to like talk about this. And literally like yesterday, the person that told me this was like, oh yeah, you can talk about it. So this friend like works in Broadway. That's like the term for New York's West End.
Broadway. And, in case you didn't know.
And bougie. Like 2 years ago, they had like meeting after meeting after meeting with Ariana Grande's team for her to do Wicked. And obviously she did the TV special for Wicked where she did one song. But they wanted her to do like a residency. And then obviously just like things have happened. And like obviously her like in her personal life and professional, just like everything's all over the place. And obviously she's like smashing it right now. And so it just like never really came to fruition. But they like were going over for ages.
That but she would be amazing.
She would have killed it. But it was also probably gonna be super demanding to do. I've only ever seen 3 West End shows, and Wicked was one of them, and it was phenomenal.
It was amazing when I saw it.
I haven't seen it, but it sounds like the one that I would want to watch.
So my mom cried.
Like, aww, the effort behind it and the production, costume, everything, and like even the orchestra madness.
Yeah, I mean, when it's right, it's so good, because I remember when I was a bit younger, I went to see The Lion King and I cried. It was so good.
I'm still yet to see that, because that's Hannah, like a classic.
Hannah Manana.
That's your audition for the soundtrack with Beyonce.
I auditioned for The Lion King and that was it. Didn't get a part.
Beyonce got your role.
Beyonce.
Always stealing.
Exactly.
My favorite, speaking of Beyonce and West End, have you seen that clip on YouTube that has like hundreds of thousands of views, where it's from like some 2006 documentary where like before Dreamgirls, doing dance rehearsals, and one of the like choreographers is like, hey, like my friends are doing this like Broadway show, like a main major one, I don't know what it was, but let's see if you can get tickets. And Beyonce was like, they'll say no. And the dancer was like, why? And they said, they always say no to me because they think I'm gonna steal what they're doing.
Oh.
And it was like really deep, and then like it just cuts away to some other scene. But like, because at that period especially, well, she's always had this at like different points in her career, but people were especially talking about her choreography was always being taken from other choreographers without credit,
right?
So they were just like not giving her access to these shows. And it's crazy because it's Beyonce. Like, you feel like Beyonce could do anything, even in 2006.
Yeah. Oh, that also, I really...
That sent chills through you.
I know, but it just made me think of her documentary, which I'm a big fan of, Life is But a Dream. Have you seen it?
Yes. And the lady's a really big fan of that documentary, didn't mention.
Yeah, I was crying throughout, you know. It was me being straight and watching it as like, it was educational for me, because there was just so many things that I didn't know. One thing that really stuck out to me in your documentary was you said like, when people come out, people think that's it, like that's like a weight is lifted off your shoulders. Yeah. And I kind of want you to elaborate more on that, because you said that there's like still obstacles even after that.
Well, I guess like firstly, thank you. It's really, thank you for watching it. It's called Growing Up Gay. It's probably available online.
So it's on YouTube, watch it.
And I think you're right. Like it's, so the thing is like, after that documentary, like I know actually some people from our school, because my best friend was in the documentary as well, George, were really surprised by what we were saying. Because you just, some, it's really hard to tell when someone's going through something. You might just, you might never ever know. So I think that's a good point to like always, what, you know, have that in mind, that people might say and do one thing, but actually going through something completely different, and that could be really painful. But in terms of like the coming out story, like it's such a it's so different for every person. Mm-hmm. But often, you know, like, like for me, I came out to my friends and then my family, and now I'm basically out to the world. But most people, you know, might come out to their friends or their family, but then they're continually coming out at their jobs for the next 10 years. New people they meet, like, when are they going to tell them they're gay? Like, what about in the back of a taxi? Like, do they tell the taxi driver they're gay? Like, how much do they disclose it?
Yeah.
And so that can be a challenge. But also, I think personally for many people, you know, you can say you're gay, but actually coming to terms with what that means about you and your identity is a much longer journey, I think.
Definitely. A theme that seemed really like poignant as well was the fact of like speaking out and how important that is. So like, since the documentary, do you think you are more comfortable with talking about things now?
Yeah, and I realize how doing it was like, was so good in so many ways, and I did learn so many things, but one of them was like, almost everybody, regardless of how they identify, is you know, in pain in some way. And if you can open up a way for them to speak about that, to have a conversation, is like, they'll jump at the chance, and that's really meaningful. I think you get to exchange something then that is meaningful. And but that was the biggest thing, really, that everybody is just like, everybody wants to kind of speak and say something, but mm-hmm. we don't always know how.
I remember there was a teacher in school that, like, I was really lucky that for, like, the majority of my schooling experience, I didn't really face any, like, homophobia or anything really like that. But there was one year, there was a teacher in one class where it was a specific group of three guys that would always say really bad things. And it was, like, right next to her desk, and she just would never do anything. And then I remember, like, years, down the line, like, bumping into her, and she was sort of, like, she seemed like she could tell that I wasn't, like, really in the mood to talk to her.
Oh.
And she was like, oh, is everything okay? Like, was I like, in a jokey way, she was like, oh, was I not a good teacher? I was like, no, like, you were great at your job, like, when it came to, like, teaching me that class, but you were sort of enabling
these
students.
I'm so happy you told her.
I was like, I don't know, like, what your personal views were, like, what was going on, but in that environment, you know, a kid should be able to go to school and not have to hear things like what those kids were saying. And I know for a fact you could hear them because you were hearing other things that were going on,
yeah.
And yet you chose to let it carry on.
What did she say?
She was just like, oh, I didn't really think of it that way, I'm really sorry. And as well, like, she was like, oh, I didn't
how
know.
How can
cause, like,
not, though?
She was like, oh, I didn't know, like, if you were gay or what it was. I didn't know, like, how it would affect you. And I was like, well, even if I wasn't,
but I think that's
it would have still been an issue, because yeah. You shouldn't, like, hate speech or homophobic slurs. Like, it's still hateful when you say to someone who's straight. It doesn't yeah. automatically make it, like...
You're
fine.
Right, but I think there's a real lack of understanding in all areas, you know, especially in schools. Like, I think a lot of teachers struggle to know how, they don't feel like they know how to deal with issues like homophobia arising or language and stuff. I think mm-hmm. they can, sometimes not enough provided for, you know, people in schools to, like, actually help tackle bullying and homophobia and everything.
There's a lot of, you know, news stories and documentaries and great things about teachers who could be super out in their personal life, and then in school, like, it's like a hidden thing. And I'm not saying they need to, like, make it a thing, but, you know, other teachers can talk about their, you know, heterosexual partner or, like contextual clues like that, and it's nothing at all. But there's always new stories of, like, oh,
well,
a gay teacher said that they were gay and now, like, they're getting fired.
Yeah, we had that at my school, because I went to a Catholic secondary school. There was one teacher who was honest all the way through, because it was a Catholic school. I remember one of, like, the senior teachers being like, you can't say stuff like that, you shouldn't be telling the kids stuff like that. And eventually he ended up leaving. It was kind of like he couldn't be himself.
Yeah
it just sucked.
I think it goes back to very outdated and bigoted view that gay people are a threat to children,
mm-hmm.
that they're gonna somehow pervert young minds, or that's part of the cause is, like, to turn children gay. And it's so ridiculous when you say it like that, but mm-hmm. so many people
but
still feel that way.
Yeah.
We encounter it all the time, because sometimes we get comments about our show, Years and Years Show, being not family friendly enough. And it's honestly, there's nothing explicit in our show. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes two men will perhaps touch each other in a very contemporary dance-esque way,
mm-hmm.
And wear clothes that don't typically match their like gender presentation, you know? That's it. And I am of the opinion kids need to see that stuff. Kids
yeah,
need
definitely.
To see queer identities being celebrated and gender being expressed in different ways. Like, that, I really fully believe is helpful for kids, but it's so often met with, like, oh no, we don't want to upset. It's mainly the parents. They don't want to upset parents. Like, really, it's just, we're not parent friendly.
Something I want to bring up was, you know, on a previous episode we discussed Dua Lipa's show last year in China and all the issues that came up from that, and what it's like for a, you know, pop artist who has a really big queer following being able to perform in a country where it isn't necessarily super safe for that community. And we were sort of discussing, you know, where does the fault lie? Or, you know, there was a lot of people hurt at that concert or jailed or just hit by police in China. Is Dua Lipa responsible for that situation because she knows the type of audience she has and yet was happy to go ahead with a show in a country where the laws and protections weren't there for that audience? Or is the fault with the promoter for not, you know, checking that it was safe? Or where does the chain of responsibility go to? And, you know, you did a show in Poland where you wore, like, a pride flag. And that's something really interesting to me. And obviously the rights in Poland are very different to that in China.
Mm.
But it's still, like, I want to know your thoughts on that.
Well, I think every time you do a show, you know, there's different people from... So the venue have their own security team. The you know, everyone's got... But the artists will have their own security team, presumably as well, if they're a certain level. And, you know, it's a priority to make sure your audience is safe. Obviously, there's always going to be instances where you can't control stuff. But in that sense, I'm of the opinion that if you can provide a safe space for an audience that in a country that might... not necessarily provide safety for the people who come into your show. Like we're playing, you know, we play in countries like Russia and Poland as well as China. I think that's a good thing. And, you know, I know how many queer fans we have in those countries. So it's I personally love going to meet them and playing for them. If something happens, I don't think you can, you know, I think everyone in the chain, like you said, should be aware of this kind of happening because, that's why we take extra security to places like that, just so we can help the audience feel safe and for people that are coming, because that's, you know, really crucial. We played in China and we were thrown a rainbow flag on stage. Every year's a new show, there's rainbow flags. Mm-hmm. And I'm waving the flag around and in between songs, I put it down and my tour manager comes up and grabs it and takes it off stage. And I'm like, why did you do that? It's so weird. And then and if you play in China, like the government come to your show, like they, you know, they surveil stuff, I guess.
Really?
And after the show, he told me that you're not allowed for any flags, okay, unless it's a Chinese flag. And it's just, you know, that's their law, that's their country, you know. And the rainbow flag was like, you know, contravening that. And I think it was just a very interesting, I was like, wow, that's, but, you know, for my personal politics, you know, being there was the right thing for me. I felt like it was better to be there and connect with, you know, the queer people who might be there than it was to not do the show at all. It's hard. That was a really long response, but
no, I liked it. It was deep.
There you go.
Good, yeah.
A last thing I want to bring up, you know, we've just started 2019, but if you can time travel forward, what would you like to look back on at the end of 2019 and be able to say, like, you ticked off your bucket list?
Oh, gosh. Well, we're going to South America for the first time, and I'm so excited. I've never been to South America.
Whereabouts are you going?
We are going to Argentina, Chile. We're going all over, actually.
Come to Brazil.
We are actually going to Brazil. So that will be really fun. I'm also hoping to, like, I just, like, want my butt to get better every year.
You will be Normani this time next year.
I need that inspo.
Vic with two C's.
Yes!
No.
Thank you so much for coming on. Let listeners know where they can find you on social media if they aren't already following you.
Thank you for having me. If you would like to follow me on Twitter, my at is Alexander_Ollie. Instagram's at Ollie Years, and then the band is just Years and Years on everything, so we're easy to find.
My favorite thing is the guy on Twitter that has at Ollie Alexander is like big football fan. Like, it's like very, very mask straight male. Like, it's a very polar opposite ends.
I know. I wonder if he's like annoyed that he shares a name with me.
People probably tweet him.
But, or maybe he's happy. I don't know.
You should DM and be like, swap usernames.
Yeah,
exactly.
And the lady, where can they find you?
On Twitter, you can find me at MaybeNalady. And on Instagram, you can find me at SleepingWithNalady.
My favorite. So it's very provocative in the best way.
Yes.
And you can find me at David Olshanetsky on Instagram. Olshanetsky is spelled Olshanetsky. Wow. Just rewind that until you get it.
Or you can find it through me.
Yeah, just type David through her following. And you can find me on Twitter at WrittenByDavid. Thanks, guys. Hope your 2019 is incredible. We are so happy to announce that we will be coming back for a second season once again as a Spotify original podcast. You'll be able to find out way more details regarding our spring debut on the Lady and I social media close to the date. But until then, go and stream our associated playlist and go back and share your favorite episodes with friends. See you soon!